Hello and welcome to MGO Podcast 9.4. I am Ace Amender, as Brian Cook has once again absconded from his bossly duties. But he is actually with us on the podcast, and we will be talking about the Purdue game and much more.
Going to be a very unconvincing thing I'm about to say, but I am a jackhammer. I don't take sick days except for the one I took on Friday. But I'm playing hurt. Please excuse any coughs, phlegmy exhalations, and of course my voice, which sounds like Jennifer Tilly a little bit.
Yeah, got a little rough edge to it. Not bad.
So sorry for your unexpected arousals, podcast listeners. We'd like to thank our sponsors. Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, Downtown, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Human Element, Lantana Hummus, Michigan Law Grad, Deo Bookkeeping, and Ann Arbor Elder Law. We are, of course, recording at The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, Downtown, in one of their 13 conference rooms, one for every team in the Big Ten.
There it is.
So there it is. 28-10. Michigan eventually, you know, piles up a huge yardage advantage.
Yes.
They eventually shut Purdue down. It was really hairy in the first half. They actually go into halftime down, and then they adjust. And John O'Korn becomes, I don't think I've ever seen a performance like this. Like, it's not the greatest performance in the history of Michigan football, but it might be the most unexpected.
Yeah, I mean, this is comparable to, like, if Russell Bellamy had bounced back from that Nebraska game and had a game like this.
Right.
Because this kind of came out of nowhere based on the John O'Korn we've seen, at least in the Michigan uniform. There were some flashes in Houston, but we weren't in Houston. We didn't get to see that, really.
And we did see the Indiana game last year.
Yeah, we saw that up close and personal, and to see this, all of a sudden, it looks like Michigan has a new starting quarterback.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, so he's 18 of 26 for more than 10 yards in attempt. Mm-hmm. He throws a touchdown. He has an interception that was his fault. I mean, he throws it behind Grant Perry. But still unfortunate that turns into an interception.
Yeah.
It's like he threw it to a guy. Like, not, you know, 90% of the time, even if that's incomplete, it hits the ground.
Yeah, like it's batted down, not up.
And he didn't really throw into coverage. In the second half, he had like two, like, what is going on throws. Where this is like Michigan's touchdown drive where they get a first down and then they get like a 15-yard penalty like twice in consecutive. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, I don't care about that. I'm John O'Korn.
I'm going to hit a receiver between three defenders in an NFL that. Window.
He threw that and I was like, no! And then it's perfect. It's between the three guys. Catch, run, first down. Michigan picks up like a chop block or something.
Yeah.
And then Purdue goes zero. And he does the thing where he just throws it at Zach Gentry.
God, it was beautiful.
It was
just the perfect pre-snap read and throw. I mean, like, you know, the throw doesn't have to be perfect there. It's just put it up
to give the 6'8 guy a chance.
And he did that perfectly. And that was something that, you know, when you look at the receiving distribution, I think this is kind of what we would have wanted to see heading into this game is, like, use those tight ends, use Grant Perry. And that was what he was going to, was looking at those guys first. And it was really successful.
Yeah, so they run a bunch of mesh, and they get a lot of catch and run from their tight ends, which is something that you might not get against a better defense. But he comes in, and, you know, I think there was one just kind of dumb dump-off play on, like, a waggle that he had early where he turns around, and there's a guy in his face, and he just kind of, like, sidearms it directly to Henry Poggi. And I'm like, oh, this might work out now.
Yeah.
Because that's a throw that I think is tough for a lot of guys, and he just –
You have that pressure right in your face when you're turning around, that can lead to a lot of bad things, and he handled that quite well.
Yeah, so he's the starting quarterback now, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to think so.
Like, regardless of Spate's health.
And, you take into account Spate's performance so far this year, and then you look at not only what O'Korn did in this game, but how he fits with the offense going forward, and you know, they're still letting a lot of pressure off that right side. And O'Korn was able to make that matter a lot less by breaking the pocket. And then, you know, Spate's been able to break the pocket, but usually he's kind of throwing the ball away after that. O'Korn was breaking the pocket, looking downfield and hitting guys.
Yeah, of course, there was the miraculous escape.
Yes.
On Michigan's, was that their?
That was the first touchdown
drive. That was the first touchdown drive. So they're stuck, and he's almost tackled, and he turns around. And the thing that not impressed me is not that he escaped, but he's like, all right, I can't get outside. I'm going to form up. I'm going to try to find somebody. And somebody was open, and he threw it to him.
Yeah, and it feels like, you know, Indiana John O'Korn probably just keeps scrambling around like a madman on that play. Yeah. But, you know, on Saturday, he stood in there and fired.
And, you know, the only time that he had one of those weird man dropbacks, it was actually, like, a good idea. He was getting pressure. He drifted backwards. And I think he hit Gentry on the mesh route that was Michigan's first touchdown.
Yeah.
So he looked like a completely different guy.
Yes.
And it kind of reminded me of when everybody was freaking out about Ryan Glasgow being above Brian O'Neill on the depth chart. So it actually turns out that John O'Korn was the second string quarterback.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Maybe we don't need to like be freaking out about Brandon Peters at this point.
I mean, it does make a certain amount of sense. Cause you know, we heard, you know, last year it was Spate and O'Korn are neck and neck heading into the season, and then, you know, the season plays out and we don't really see it that way because of the way the game's played out. But a similar story this year, although Spate takes control of the quarterback competition a little bit earlier, but he's also the returning starter. But it kind of, like, it was going to be weird if, like, O'Korn was just actually that bad considering all the practice hype because, you know, Jim Harbaugh's there. They got to see something.
Yeah, I mean, practice hype is so hit and miss, though.
It really is. But just, like, it wasn't just practice hype. It was like, this is where he is on the depth chart.
Right.
And, you know, this is a quarterback competition between these people. And it was, you know, I mean, I was still quite pleasantly surprised by that performance, obviously, but.
Yeah, I mean, the difference in yardage gained was stark.
Quite.
So three drives with Wilton Spate, 12 total yards, and 400 on 10 actual drives, and they had like 11 at the end where they're just running out of the clock.
Yes.
So that's 4 yards versus 40 yards a drive, which is, well, it's not good.
You know, factor 10.
Yeah. And it was just, it was weird how things felt easy in the second half sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, because that's really been like, the thing about the offense this year so far is very little has felt easy. And in this game, they really kind of settled into the short pitch and catch, run after the catch, really helped open everything up.
Yeah, they looked more like a West Coast kind of team where it's like, yeah, we're going to have open guys, we're going to hit them reliably.
Yeah.
We're going to get some yards after the catch. And wow.
I mean, with McCune and Gentry, those are some athletic tight ends to utilize. Like, I know you said, I don't know how this is going to work against better defenses, and I don't think it'll work this well against better defenses, but those guys are going to be able to do some things all year.
Yeah, Gentry especially, he was just outstanding where he has crazy speed. He's huge. You know, I think this might not have been a breakout performance for him, but I feel one is coming in the near future.
Yeah, I mean, he's... And I know Eric was trying to get a photo of him on one of his catches and trying to get his entire body in the frame. And he's adjusting to this catch. And we get almost all of him in the picture, but there's just too much of him to quite to quite get into a photograph. But I was looking at that one for a while yesterday because he's also, like, adjusting very impressively to this catch.
Yeah.
He's just an unusual dude, and you don't see many players like that out there.
Yeah, and those two guys, and then Perry had a great game, especially with his adjustments.
Yeah.
Like, when O'Korn was scrambling out there and he needed someone, Perry was reacting.
Yeah.
He was available, and he got hit for a couple of really important first downs to rescue some bad situations. So, you know, with Tariq blackout, I think this is, I mean, you mentioned this earlier, this was the distribution that made sense.
Yeah.
And hopefully they can start getting Peoples-Jones more involved.
Yeah, that would be nice. I mean, he's the type of athlete that you're going to want to get the ball to no matter what. So I think they'll start working him in more. But it was a little surprising to see some of the snap distribution on the outside because he wasn't on the field as much as I expected.
Not really. I mean, they went with Nate Shanley, who had a couple of nice catches.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't really target Crawford very much. It was mostly Perry and Shanley. And did Crawford have a catch? He must have had at least one.
He had two.
Two.
for 13 yards.
So not particularly memorable.
No.
So that's, I guess, the good part of the offense. And then the bad part of the offense was everything else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Chris Evans had a good game.
He did.
We should mention that.
I mean, he had the touchdown that kind of put the capper on it. And mm-hmm. He looked back to his enticing freshman year where he was able to just kind of pick a hole and dart through it. Like, he has this weird kind of like jumping thing where he's like, all right, I'm going to jump stop and then go.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had a couple short area jukes to kind of squeeze out an extra few yards.
Yeah. We didn't see much of Isaac. I imagine that's because he was still dinged up from last week.
Yeah, and then Higdon has a pretty uneven performance in that fumble.
Yeah, he puts the ball on the turf. I mean, Michigan's had terrible fumble luck this year. Like,
they have, and Purdue's had excellent fumble
luck.
They haven't
gotten, I think, one back, have they? Like, they've every time they put the ball.
Well, they got
on the
one
turf.
Back. Oh, Michigan fumbling the ball. Yeah, I don't know. Not that I can recall.
I think they've lost 100% of their fumbles so far. So that's.
Not ideal.
It's worse than you would expect, unless you're Rich Rodriguez. I was pretty disappointed with the offensive line, especially in the first half.
Yes.
Just guys running through. I mean, the Spate sack that I think knocked him out was, you know, you have Isaac and you have Cole kind of moving to the left side of the line, and they both go to the same guy. You get a guy free up the middle, and that's game over for your play.
It was surprising to see Cole looked like he missed a couple assignments in this game. I don't know whether that's necessarily on him or people around him missing assignments, but there were some disconcerting communication or assignment issues on the offensive line, and it wasn't just limited to the right side.
Yeah, there was a lot of frustration and a lot of guys kind of coming through free. You know, when you can't block the first level, it's not good.
No, and just to see, I mean, Purdue have one sack all season heading into this game, and they end up with four here.
So that's pretty grim, and I think it's time to start kind of like looking at Tim Drevno and expecting a little bit more out of his position group. And I know people are like, well, he's only doing the guards and the centers, and Frey's doing the tackles, and I'm like, I don't really think that's the way.
That's not quite how you distribute it. Right. I don't think you have to coach the offensive line as a unit.
Yeah. I mean, they did get better in the second half. Still a very disconcerting performance.
Yeah.
I have my theory about what's going on. It's like they haven't really had most of the stuff that they had last year where it's like, oh, what weird thing is going to happen this week?
Yeah.
And they haven't been doing the weird things, and I think that they're just trying to rep inside zone, get real good at inside zone. And they're not good at inside zone right now. And they're practicing so much on that thing they're not very good at. And they also don't have the frippery to kind of make
up for. Yeah, because, I mean, especially since you're working in new starters and whatever, they don't have that frippery down yet, I would assume. They're still trying to get the basics for the most part.
Yeah, so, they did have that counter off the crack pitch for the touchdown.
That was nice.
Which I specifically requested on Twitter. And so, it's good to see that they did have a response to a team selling out to stop that. I really wish they would have not spent so many downs on the crack pitch before going to the counter.
Yeah, and it is becoming disconcerting that it just feels like this rushing offense really needs them to scheme up a hole instead of being able to rely on the offensive line to just work one open themselves.
Yeah. So, we'll see. I mean, I imagine it will get better. This is a very young offensive line, and three of the starters are either second-year players or functionally second-year players since Elizio basically missed all last season.
Yes.
So, they'll improve. Will they improve enough? Probably not.
Yeah, definitely an open question.
I mean, if Michigan wants
seems
to be
leaning no.
a playoff contender, the offensive line is the biggest hurdle to that. It really doesn't feel like it's going to get there this year.
No, it'd be one thing if it was just the pass protection, but the fact that they're really not doing great in the run game too becomes a real issue.
I mean, the Newsom injury is just...
That was a multi-year devastating injury.
To lose that guy and then lose him for a second season is like the number one guy Michigan could not have afforded to lose. And they lose him for two freaking years. So it's bad news. Because yeah. Elizio got kind of owned in this game on a couple of the sacks.
Yes, he did.
Which is one thing. I mean, that's a guy who probably needed another year to, like, get it together to be a real potential starter. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what I think of Mike Onwenu's performance, because he got pulled pretty frequently for John Runyon. But they seem to be alternating. So that could have been just it's 90 degrees and this guy's 350 pounds.
Yeah, that was something that came to mind, because Onwenu, there were a couple plays where it looked like he was breathing a little heavy afterwards. And, like, you know, that's a lot of weight to carry around when it's that hot out.
Yeah, I mean, almost 90. Michigan was in the white, at least, instead of the black.
Yeah, thank goodness. Purdue, interesting uniform choice on their part.
I mean, I mentioned that, and somebody replied to me like, look at this article about how white absorbs a lot of stuff and black doesn't. I'm like, dude, I've been outside.
Yeah, like, what? Like, I've been a human who has lived.
Right, yeah.
Walked into the sun again. I mean, I know we're bloggers, but come on, man.
Yeah, we're bloggers. And then I yelled at Brady Quinn because of the targeting thing.
God, he was not good.
Well, I honestly didn't mind him that much, except when he was trying to argue that Michigan should have been penalized for things that shouldn't have been penalties.
No.
But, I mean, so this was the Eubanks one.
Yes.
Where, I mean, he's a defenseless receiver. He receives a launch into the helmet.
Yeah.
And he's down on the ground, and he leaves for the locker room. And Brady Quinn's like, oh, that's tough on the defender. That's not tough on the defender. That is the very hit they're trying to get out of
yeah,
the game.
Yeah, that is exactly what they're trying to eliminate.
I mean,
I thought both targeting penalties were quite obvious.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, the second one was even more obvious, if that's even possible.
Well, they were both pretty obvious.
They were both very obvious.
They were so obvious that I thought there was at least a 60% chance that the booth would get it right.
Yeah. It's like they might not screw this up for once. That was pretty blatant.
I mean, there are targeting penalties that I'm totally like, come on, let them play football.
Yeah.
But those two were shots to the head against defenseless players that, you know, should definitely be flagged.
Yeah, those are things that they're justifiably trying to work out of the game.
So yeah, I mean he's fine. Like he doesn't bother me, Quinn. Like I thought the announcing was fairly decent, except for a couple of weird.
Yeah, it was at the point where I could just mostly ignore it and watch the game. And
yeah,
honestly, for my announcing standards, that's fine. That's like a B.
Yeah, like, you know, if Michigan's, like, struggling through a crappy first half and they're down 3 to Purdue.
And I'm not, like, throwing things at the TV hoping they somehow get through and hit the announcer, like, then they're doing all right.
Yeah, I'll mute the TV at that point. And I didn't mute it at all. So good on you, Fox. Good on you for putting the game on Fox Business.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the lead-in could not have really... Well, been any more frustrating. Well,
there's a baseball game. Getting preempted for a baseball game is like getting preempted.
And also, whose brilliant decision was it to give a freaking baseball game a 3-hour window leading into a football game? Like, you know exactly what's going to happen. And then, of course, like the unbeatable closer blows a save against a team that hasn't come back in the ninth inning all year. And we end up with a Fox Business Channel overlay.
What a terrible sport.
Chunk of the first quarter.
Like, there's 162 of those games. Just cut to the football game and like
they were talking about how like the Brewers at this point like didn't even want to win. And then they hit that home run. It was just like, why don't you just strike out and go home? Like you don't care. Your season's functionally over. Let us watch the sport that is actually fun to watch.
Ugh, terrible.
Baseball's the worst.
There's so much of it too. It's just
it's everywhere. It's bad.
Dave's given us the stop talking about this.
Yeah. He's trying to get us to stop hating on baseball, but, you know.
We hate baseball.
It's tough.
But what we don't hate is Don Brown, so we'll talk about that after a break.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team. Yeah!
painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
All right, give it to me. I want it.
All right, Purdue's second half drive chart against Michigan. We have 3 plays for 1 yard and a punt.
Okay, not good.
3 plays for 3 yards and a punt.
That's better.
3 plays, negative 3 yards, punt.
That's worse.
3 plays, 5 yards,
ooh,
punt. 5 plays,
ooh,
3 yards,
oh,
punt. And then 1 play, 3 yards, fumble.
Oh.
Not great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Or actually, from our perspective, incredible, amazing, wonderful, delightful, all of those things.
And so Purdue has like under 200 yards in this game, something like that, like 190.
Yeah, they end up with 189. And
100 of those yards were either the quarterback throwback on the first play of the game,
mm-hmm,
or the all throwbacks drive.
Yes.
Which was their sole touchdown. And other than that, this was a complete domination start to finish. All the other trick plays get nerfed. Like they had what, like 3 or 4 of them?
Yeah, don't run flea flickers against Devin Bush. It's a bad idea.
Oh, my God.
He's going to close that ground before you can get that pass off.
I've never seen a broadcast give player of the game to a linebacker with 5 tackles and 1 sack.
Yeah.
And they did, and they were right.
Yep.
It blew my mind, guys. I was like, that's correct.
Yeah, especially since there was, like, you know, Chase Winovich just hanging out there with 3 sacks. Like,
yeah,
there was the obvious, like, counting stats,
yeah,
candidate. There was, like, the John O'Korn redemption story candidate, and they actually, for once, picked the right dude.
Despite his, just because he has this incredible impact on the game. And that starts on the first play. Tyreek Kinnell actually slashes in and holds that quarterback throwback down. But Bush was going to make that tackle.
Yes.
After running basically from the other side of the field.
Yeah.
And his quickness is outstanding. The flea flicker, as you mentioned, against Devin Bush is just the worst possible of all ideas. Because he's going to be like, oh, I can probably catch up to that pitch.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already Michigan's best linebacker since David Harris.
Yeah. Yeah,
I like that's not even a question.
I thought I was going to have to think about it, but no, he is.
And Dave Harris was real good.
David Harris was really damn good. No, I got a question shot at me at Twitter about whether he was already playing at that David Harris level, and it was like that was the only thing that made me be like maybe tap the brakes a little bit. But at this point, it's getting close.
Like I feel like I'll have some issues later in the year. Like he's young, he's not God himself.
Yeah,
that's Tom Brown.
Yes.
So like I feel like he's gonna get got at some point.
But we haven't seen it yet.
We haven't
really
seen it yet. Yeah,
and he has a nice pass breakup in this game. Like he's everywhere.
I wrote down Pog Stackles. What? Oh, player of the game, 5 tackles.
So we've covered the Pog Stackles.
Oh, Pog Stackles.
man.
That's just nonsense. Like the rest of our bullshit.
Yeah.
So Chase Winovich should have 3 sacks.
He's once again outstanding.
I think he and Bush shared 2 different sacks. So like
it's quite possible.
Like Bush had a half sack and he had a half sack, and then Winovich had a half sack and Bush had a half sack. He gets 2 more. He's got 6 on the season already. That's on pace for 18, which is definitely going to happen. Would be
very much so.
My preseason prediction for both him and Gary was 16.
Looking good there. So, like, he's gonna they're going to get that.
He could hit that himself.
Yeah.
And Bush, of course, has 4.5 sacks, which seems low.
Like, yeah, and several more times where he has just absolutely terrorized the quarterback into running into somebody else.
Yeah, he's so those guys are playing out of their minds. Hurst had a great game.
Yeah.
Gary was a little quiet again. I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, if everybody else is going to be this good, I mean, Gary's clearly so good that teams are focusing a lot on just eliminating him from the equation.
Yeah, I feel like he's getting attention that is allowing Winovich and Bush to, like, get one-on-one matchups.
Yeah.
I mean, or in Bush's case, like, one-on, maybe one.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you're doubling a defensive lineman on this defense, somebody's probably running free into the backfield.
Yeah.
And if that person's Devin Bush, somebody's probably going to get impacted very hard.
Yes, sir. And then we saw for the first time this year, both Hill and Long get tested with some frequency, and they were great.
Yes. Yeah, Long, there was nothing. There was no room to put in passes and like that
Hill,
they were trying to
Hill
force
might have got beat like once or twice on a short throw, but he was all over it. There were a couple of like slants or crossing routes or something where you see the ball hit the ground. And you're like, okay, the flag's coming out. And then you see the replay and you're like, nope.
No.
That wasn't even close to a flag. He's just running with the guy and then he dives to like poke it away in a totally badass fashion. And I'm like, what was Zordich complaining about?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of shocked that he somehow didn't get credited for a pass breakup on there, but I was going to note
what?
That it is quite encouraging to see that other than the statistical failure of not recording that PBU, the only appearance on the defensive stat line for either of them is David Long with a pass breakup.
No tackles. That's good cornerbacking.
That's real good cornerbacking.
I can't believe they didn't give Hill a PBU.
Yeah, I don't know how they came to that conclusion.
And then I have a rant about pass interference.
Rant away.
So late first half, Hill's running down the field with his guy. He has outside position. The ball's thrown outside, and the receiver tries to run through Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And he falls over as a result, and, you know, stadium's complaining. Brady Quinn's complaining. I'm just like, the sad thing is like that call often comes out.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
I was kind of surprised the flag didn't come out. That's not because I thought it was pass interference.
But that absolutely should not be pass interference.
It was a bad throw.
What is Hill supposed to do? Like, Hill earned that position.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't be able to commit pass interference with your body unless you're, like, hitting somebody.
Yeah, because the only option otherwise is to disappear.
Right. And just dissolve and not be.
Yeah.
Seems like bad defensive backing.
Yeah. Also, like
you're supposed to be
a difficult thing to do on the fly.
So, I mean, I don't think that defensive backs should be able to run over guys on like back shoulder stuff.
Yeah.
But if they're in front and they slow up, or if they're running next to a guy and they've earned that position. They have dominant position relative to the ball. You know, I think they should get to have their dominant position and not be flagged.
Yeah, otherwise you're penalizing defensive backs for playing well and rewarding quarterbacks for being crappy.
Yeah.
And that doesn't seem great.
It's not justice.
No, no,
it's
not.
I want pass interference justice.
Yes.
I know that Jane will be disappointed. In
we're sorry to be taking away some of the efficacy of your offense.
Yes, but the LPI offense should be reduced. that's my rant.
But hey, they got it right.
Yeah, and you know the thing that was impressive is that there really weren't very many open windows for Purdue at all.
No,
like they didn't have opportunities to make plays that were there, and they just didn't make the plays. Maybe they dropped a screen at one point, I think. But like even there was like a deep shot at Metellus that was kind of open, but
it would have had to be a good throw.
It would have had to be like a DO. And it was not. And it's like one of those things where, okay, there's a window there. He's not in perfect position. He's probably going to tackle. There's a lot of throws that he's able to make a play on.
And when you're playing Purdue, you can kind of assume that they're not going to throw a DO. Like,
yeah.
They've got some scattershot QBs.
So that's kind of like the definition of push coverage. And that's like almost the worst thing that happened on defense.
That's like the coverage event that stands out as the hairiest. And other than that, they were just step for step with guys.
Yeah, and like we didn't see any examples in this game of Mike McCray getting edged.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he played those well or if Michigan had schemed it up so that wasn't necessary yet, but that's, I think, an encouraging sign because this is the kind of offense that would try to do that as much as possible.
Yeah, they'd be attacking that again and again if it was there for the taking.
Yep. So... I mean, I don't know what else to say about this defense. It's number one in the country. It feels like the number one defense in the country, give or take in Alabama.
Yep.
It's got 10 new starters.
It's nuts. And we're starting to see, I mean, Robo comes in late, forces a fumble. Aubrey Solomon has a couple flashes in there. Like, they're starting to have some of the depth guys also show up a little bit. Like,
yeah, Robo was actually in there in the first half for a drive. And that might have been a... Devin Bush got dinged up or just we're going to put you in for a drive and see what happens. And they didn't go anywhere on that drive. So, not bad.
Developing depth after losing 10 starters is pretty nuts.
Well, I mean, it seems like they have three cornerbacks that they can trust, rely on.
Yeah.
So that's some depth there. And, you know, Solomon's getting there. And we saw some Dwumfor in this game.
Yeah, we did.
So there's
and he had a pressure and close on the quarterback where like you can see at least where the bigger Mo Hurst comparisons come from.
Yeah.
Obviously if he was really bigger Mo Hurst, he'd be, you know, the NFL.
Yeah, he'd be playing.
Yeah. I don't care about draft eligibility. He'd somehow be in the NFL already anyway.
Right, yeah. So that's ace, everybody. Doesn't really care about your rules. Pogs tackles. I wish I don't have anything more to say.
Yeah, like, Pogstackles.
Pogstackles, that's what this defense is. Steve the defense, I give it a nickname.
Yeah.
And people are like, no, we're going to call
him. You're going with Steve over Randy?
Well, yeah, probably. I don't know. Well, it depends. It depends on how much savoir faire they have. All right, I think of this section.
Yeah, I think we're done.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9.
Colby, what about you?
7.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending. NMLS 1161358. Equal housing lender.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor, from San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai, but as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far, because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Special teams in game theory, there isn't really any of it either.
Like, yeah, there's not much.
Their punter erased Peoples-Jones, so good on that guy.
Yeah.
Crawford had a really bad decision to bring a kick out.
He did. He hesitated, like, twice.
And then he's just, like, when you hesitate, like, that should be like, okay.
Yeah, that's when you take a knee.
That's take a knee. And we saw Brad Robbins, a.k.a. Quinn Nordine.
I have a prospect to name for him.
Oh, do you?
He's old Quinn Nordine.
That's not bad. That's not bad. So give me Robbins' stats here.
He has 7 punts, averages 40.6 yards with a long of 45. Only one of his 7 inside the 20, but no touchbacks.
And no return yardage, I don't think. Like maybe they had one that went for 2 yards or something.
They had, Jackson Anthrop ended up with 2 returns for 8 yards.
Yeah, so... pretty much the definition of a solid, efficient.
Yeah, you're netting like 38 to 40 yards. Yeah. That's pretty good.
You're not really giving many opportunities to return kicks.
Yeah. Yeah, he was hanging them pretty high, it seemed
he
like.
He was. So that and no shanks.
No
so
shanks.
We wondered how many shanks would be too many shanks, and 3 apparently is
yes,
too many
that,
shanks.
That is the number.
So they pull off the red shirt, and now Michigan has 4 different people playing football wearing the number 3.
Yeah, you know.
Which
and
think
that confounded the Fox broadcast crew.
I think is the theoretical maximum, because you got 1 on offense, you got 1 on defense, and then you have 2 different specialists.
Yeah, it'd be difficult to come up with get another one.
Well, okay, Doug Fug.
Yeah,
just not his name. His name is James.
His name is James.
Old Doug.
Old Doug. All our specialists are going to have prospected names that are kind of insulting because they're just other people's names.
Yeah, I'm very stupid. So he could be number 3, too.
Yeah, he could.
So we could have 5 number 3s. I hope they get on.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Why have they not done this already? Let's just get the army of 3s out there.
I think 5 is really the theoretical maximum.
Yes, yeah. At that point, like each of your kicking specialists and then a guy on offense and a guy on defense.
I mean, they could give, like, Kemp 3 as well.
I mean, he subs in for Gary, right, so. Yeah, I guess 7 is the theoretical maximum.
I don't know.
Because you have, like, one sub on each side.
I mean, you could have many, many.
Yeah, I mean, the theoretical maximum is, you know, it's pretty high. you just have to be really careful with substitution
penalties right,
at
yeah.
that point.
Like, yeah. At some
the
point,
reasonable maximum, I think, is 5.
Yes. So.
Which is totally reasonable.
Let's get on that, James Old Doug Fug. And there were no game theory decisions in this game. It was just, there was nothing at all of note.
No.
But
that's a nice thing about like comfortable wins.
Guess what happened to Michigan's red zone offense?
It functioned like the regular offense in
yes,
this game, which
scored,
was good.
They scored 3 touchdowns. I predicted that after the first 3 games where they were 1 of 10, actually 2 of 10, but
referee incompetence. Yeah. No, nobody's giving us that credit for the Florida touchdown. That was very much a touchdown.
Oh, and like Khalid Hill, it wasn't. This one was actually like a penalty. That they just had the wrong number on.
Yes.
Another
Khalid Hill's just getting hit with an eligible man downfield when he's lining up in the backfield.
And they cut
every time they show him, he's just like, how the hell does this happen? What did I do to a ref at a past life?
I don't know. Maybe they don't like self-nicknamers, but it's such a good nickname. I don't know.
Or they have something, I guess, fullbacks wearing tight end numbers, but...
But... I said that the red zone offense would perform on par with the rest of the offense after the first 3 games.
Lo and behold.
And we are off to a good start about that, because red zone offense does not exist. It does not exist.
Although you did bring up John O'Korn as the possible designated red zone quarterback, and then we got to that in a roundabout way.
Yeah, we did. I do think that red zone offense does exist if you have Tim Tebow.
Yes.
Like I think that is something that you will outperform in the red zone. But I don't think Michigan has Tim Tebow.
No.
We would know by now.
Yeah, I think we would have figured that out.
I do. I was thinking about that, and I was like, man, Vic Viramontes.
You had to bring up Vicious Vic.
Like, fullback / red zone quarterback. Give it to me.
Yeah.
He already transferred from Cal, though, so maybe that wasn't the biggest loss.
Maybe not, but.
Oh, well. So this is all I have.
Yeah, I mean,
there's nothing in this section.
There was not a lot of
make something up.
I mean, I do think it's worth talking about the play calling on offense and how it seems like.
Yeah. Go.
I mean, it just seemed like it almost was like they dumbed down the playbook for O'Korn, but that was what the offense needed.
I don't know,
because I don't know. It seems like they were the stuff that they were calling for Spate. Often didn't give him that many options. We had those plays where, you know, you're doing max protect and sending a couple guys into routes, and there's not a whole lot there. And with Spate, like, he's not going to then scramble around and make something happen with his legs. But with O'Korn, it seemed like, you know, I mean, we talked about it earlier. There was these quick hitters running a lot of mesh. And it even seemed like, you know, like, the mesh stuff was there when Spate was in, too, a little bit, and they just weren't going to it. And once O'Korn gets in there, and especially in the second half, they did seem like they settled in and started going with what was working.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of like wide receiver issues. Like there was, you were mentioning that McKeon was open on like a 3rd and 3 that they were throwing on.
Yeah.
And Doerr, the Twitter analyst guy.
J-Doo
51.
Yep.
That's his Twitter handle. I think it's just Doo 51. D-U-E. Anyway, he had the play up, and he noticed that the rub on that route didn't happen.
Yeah.
So that's another thing where, you know, if that rub happens, then Hill's open for in the flat for the first down conversion, and that's always going to be his first read, and when that first read is not there, you want him to come off that, but he didn't have time
because
he was getting pressured, so... Just a combination of bad stuff from the offensive line and bad stuff from I forget who the wide receiver was. But we've seen a lot of stuff on Spate where, you know, it really isn't on him. And I think that was another example. But, I mean, 12 total yards versus 400. You can't really dispute that.
Yeah. I mean, it looked like a different offense.
It did.
It really did.
Yeah, it did. So, onward. Michigan State next in 2 weeks.
Feeling all right about that one?
Yeah, it's, well, you know, they're back to Sparty Nose, so there you go.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna duck out because I'm about to throw up a lung, but we'll have Jamie and Ace on next.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team. Yeah.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Before we jump in and talk with Jamie Mack, let me tell you about this delicious hummus Brian left me. It is Lantana's edamame hummus. If you're a fan of edamame, you'll love this flavor. It's pureed with white beans and topped with roasted red pepper and toasted sesame seeds. It's excellent for dipping or spreading. All right, Brian has taken off, but we welcome in Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well. I'm just trying to decide if I should do my hair like Devin Bush or like Chase Winovich. I'm kind of torn by that.
They are both excellent options. I would like to see
either. I know. Somebody is suggesting that I do Devin Bush's hair, but Chase's facial hair. I don't know if I can pull that off.
Or you could do the dreads, but then bleach them platinum blonde. There's definitely some options there.
Definitely.
All right, well, a mostly not that exciting slate in the Big Ten yesterday with a couple very notable exceptions, and we will start with the most notable, which was Penn State pulling it out at the last second against Iowa in Kinnick in a night game. Spectacular atmosphere, not necessarily a spectacular game for most of the way, and Penn State pulls their asses out of the fire at the last moment with a touchdown pass to Juwan Johnson.
It was
a close game, but Penn State more than doubles Iowa's yardage. I didn't get to see the beginning of this one, so Jamie, I would like to hear your thoughts about this.
Sure. Well, I mean, one, you know, you mentioned that, hey, you know, maybe the game wasn't that great early on. What are you talking about? It was 5-0 for a long time. I mean, that alone was awesome. I mean, you know, we had first, I thought maybe we'd have a 6-5 final or something. I mean, there was a lot of possibilities there. You know, Penn State came right out and marched the football up and down the field, but they couldn't score any points. I think they had the game's first nine first downs, for example. But, you know, they kind of had some, you know, they were playing at Iowa, so they sort of had some Iowa-like drives to get started. They had a 10-play, 36-yard drive to start the game and end up punting, but they had the ball for like 6 minutes. They had an 11-play field goal drive and a 10-play missed field goal drive, and their field goal was a 19-yard field goal. That's very Iowa-like.
Yeah,
so,
for real.
It was, so Penn State was sort of pulling a little bit of an Iowa there with these long drives that didn't really go anywhere, and also just didn't, when they did go somewhere, they didn't score a lot of points. And the field position was crazy early in the game. Penn State's first five drives, two of them started in Iowa's territory, and those first five drives, average start was Penn State's 42. Meanwhile, during that time, Iowa started at their own 9, their own 10, their own 18, their own 23, and their own 1. And that last drive ended up in a safety.
Yeah.
They just swarmed. I mean, they just like, hey, let's run an obvious run play. Oh, Penn State obviously snuffed it out. Like three guys tackled him in the end zone. So it's 5-0. They get the ball on the free kick. They actually have another Iowa-like drive. Remember, this is Penn State with the ball. 6 plays, 33 yards. They turn it over on downs. But then field position starts to switch because the Iowa doesn't go anywhere. But they pin Penn State back deep in their own territory. And then they get a great interception by their stud linebacker. And Iowa needs, what, one or two plays. Boom, they score a touchdown. And all of a sudden, it's 7-5 going into the locker room. And Penn State had dominated the whole first half statistically and field position.
Yeah, the box score on this one is kind of nuts because you look at it and you see the yardage dominance by Penn State. But yards per play, Iowa actually ends up with the advantage. They average 6.1 yards per play. Penn State's at 5.8. But Penn State has 99 plays to Iowa's 45. And eventually that imbalance at the very end nips Iowa.
Yeah.
On a pretty unbelievable throw by Trace McSorley into a very tight window. I still kind of can't believe that ball got through. But that was certainly the most dramatic finish in the Big Ten this week.
I mean, that stadium, when was the last time you heard a stadium go that quiet?
Oh, man. Especially, now that we've got, like, the Iowa fan wave thing going with the Children's Hospital and everything, like, it was tough. Even after the experience there last year that I would rather not talk about, where, you know, normally I would be very happy to see them not happy, the air gets sucked out of there. It was crazy that, like, nobody left. They kept showing the stadium, like, well after that was over. I mean, you know, if I'm there as a fan at that game, I'm hightailing it out of there the moment Juwan Johnson comes down with that ball. But Iowa fans are kind of...
Right, me too. Yeah, me too. You know, going back to that yard per play, which Iowa won 6.1 to 5.8, they won that on the strength of two Akram Wadley plays in the fourth quarter. His catch and run for 70 yards, which cut the lead down to 2. They missed the 2-point conversion, and then they gave him a lead later on a 30-yard run. So both these plays were in the fourth quarter. If you take those plays out, however, Ace, Iowa only averaged 3.9 yards per play in this game, and they just had no offense really outside of those two plays. And I've mentioned it before on past podcasts, the Wadley, he's great. He is the Saquon Barkley of the Big Ten West, but they need other guys to step up. They need other playmakers. He doesn't have a second fiddle. You know, Iowa usually has a great 1-2 punch at running backs. And I know we like some of their receivers, but they only make like one or two plays a game. There's just nobody else on that offense that scares you.
Yeah, it's kind of odd. You don't really expect a Penn State-Iowa game, at least with these coaching staffs, to end up where Penn State kind of grinds out a win while Iowa is leaning on big plays to hang in there. But that was how this game played out.
And I think, you know, Iowa's defense has to be given a lot of credit. Even though they were on the field so much, they held in there. Coming into the game, Penn State had twice as many tackles for losses as their opponents, and they were +9 in sacks. Against Iowa, Iowa actually had 10 tackles for losses to Penn State's 6, and they had 4 sacks to Penn State's 1. And those negative plays, time and time again, killed long Penn State drives. Their first drive of the game, a sack killed it. You know, and they couldn't convert in the red zone because all of a sudden those were the plays that they tackle Barkley for a loss on. You just got to give them credit for hanging in there.
Yeah, this kind of felt like one of those games where if you played it out 10 more times, Penn State wins by a bigger margin probably in 8 of them, but then you've also got weird things happen at Kinnick at night, and then, you know.
Oh, we all totally know. I mean, those, yeah. The score after those first 5 drives of each team that each team had, it should have been similar to last year's game. You know, I mean, the way Penn State was moving down the field, and, you know, last year they ran them out because they were scoring touchdowns. They had the chance to do that yesterday, and they just couldn't do it.
Well, that was the Big Ten interconference matchup.
We're not going to mention you're not going to mention Barkley's stats.
Oh yeah, I mean it.
I mean, we have to at least say that
he runs for 7.5 yards per carry, breaks 211 yards just on the ground. Also was a huge factor in the passing game. I mean, he's just incredible.
Yeah, 94 yards receiving. Yeah, he was 6 yards away. Yeah, 6 yards away from a 200-yard rush, 100-yard receiving day. I don't know how often that ever happens.
Yeah, he's going to be at the Heisman ceremony, one would think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's too early to really – he's a front runner for sure.
Yeah.
I don't see that changing.
So long – I mean, especially now that since Penn State escaped that upset, so long as they remain in contention, he's gonna very much remain in contention for some significant postseason hardware. Moving on, we have a few non-conference games to get out of the way relatively quickly. Ohio State 54, UNLV 21. Obviously an overmatched UNLV team in this game. Ohio State put this away very early, scored all 54 of their points in the first 3 quarters. Story of this game for Ohio State, they really get their passing game going. JT Barrett goes 12 for 17, averages 12.3 yards an attempt, 5 touchdowns, no picks. So, I mean, relatively easy walkover for Ohio State, but for them, some encouraging signs from their offense.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the passing game woke up against UNLV, but, you know, what happens against Vegas stays against Vegas. You know, we'll see if that passing game stays during the course of the rest of the fall. Because we saw last year just sort of fade in and out a lot.
Absolutely. You know, that wasn't a big test for them. We'll see what happens when they run into some Big Ten defenses coming up here. So we will move on quickly. The Jamie Mack special, Indiana 52, Georgia Southern 17. Richard Lego takes back over the main quarterbacking duties in this one. But also, I think the big story for Indiana here is they might have found a running back.
Yeah, absolutely. Morgan Ellison, he's been climbing the depth chart. Slowly but surely, but frankly, hasn't been much of a depth chart to climb. But you know, he's a true freshman. He's from Pinkerton, Ohio. He was one of the state's better players. He's fast. He played track. But I think he could be kind of like a diamond in the rough for him, because, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, he wasn't a high recruit because he had a lot of injuries his sophomore and junior years at high school. In fact, his sophomore year, he broke his leg. But he still cracked the top 50 nationally as far as running back recruits. So, but yeah, he had 185 yards yesterday, and they need somebody to step up and run the football, because in the first 2 games of the season, their backup running back was their best runner. So that's not good.
Yeah. And then moving on, I guess we have to call it an upset at this point. UCF knocks off Maryland 38-10. Yeah, this was a bit of a fall back to earth for a Maryland team that was, you know, riding high early this season off of the Texas win. But outside of DJ Moore, they're not really getting much going there.
No, and I think the story from yesterday, especially as it goes forward for Maryland, was Kasim Hill was hurt real early in the game. I think it was the second possession, and he never came back. So they went with Max Borkenschlager, who is a sophomore who we saw last year come in during injuries, and he was just not any good.
Yeah,
you know,
overmatched.
And we'll see how the news develops on Hill this week. They play at Minnesota to open up conference play, but if Kasim Hill can't go and Borkenschlager has to start, or anybody else has to start, this is going to be the third year in a row, Ace, that Maryland has started 3 different quarterbacks, and it'll be the 4th time in the last 6 years. And in this particular case, you know, I mean, Kasim Hill is the cornerstone of this recruiting class. He's sort of the future. But they brought in a kid from North Carolina. He transferred in, Caleb Henderson, who actually I think a lot of insiders thought he might be the starter this year, but he broke his foot in the spring. He hasn't recovered from that. It doesn't look like he's going to have any impact at all with the Maryland program. But so now they're sort of scraping back to, you know, those questionable quarterbacks that we've seen them have to play the last couple of years. All the good feelings we had from them the first 2 weeks could just go out the window. And all of a sudden the team that we thought might be the new Team Chaos looks like they just could be, you know, one of the worst teams in the division if Hill can't play, or if Caleb Henderson can't emerge from his injury. The Bordenschlager kid, if he was any good, they wouldn't have brought in the transfer, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they were clearly recruiting over what they had previously on the roster, and to lose Hill not only hurt the passing game in this one, but their running game completely disappeared without, having any sort of aerial threat. Ty Johnson only gets 25 yards on 11 carries. Lorenzo Harrison, 48 on 10. They don't break a run longer than 14 yards. If Maryland's not breaking big runs, they're not winning.
Whether it was Pigrom or Hill in the first 2 weeks, it's not like they were dicing up team secondaries. They were playing off that run, and finding wide open guys. So yeah, I think it's just all unfortunately unraveled for them yesterday, So, and as far as UCF, this will lead in maybe the next game we're talking about, but Scott Frost, where are you going to be next year, buddy?
Yeah. That's a solid segue into Nebraska 27, Rutgers 17. This was a tight game throughout until the very end. We get another two interception performance from Tanner Lee, including a pick six. I know Nebraska pulls this out, but man, it's getting ugly down in Lincoln.
Yeah. Remember last year, the Rutgers-Iowa game, 14-7 Iowa, and we spent a lot of time everywhere, on the podcast, on Twitter, on the blogs, head-scratching, like, hey, how did this game get close? What happened here? We never really figured out. It's easy to figure out why this game was close. Tanner Lee is terrible.
Yep.
He threw the pick six, and that's the interception everybody is talking about, but I want to talk about the interception he also had in the first half that led to a Rutgers field goal. It was 3rd-and-2, and they're passing to Tanner Lee, and he threw it into triple coverage off his back foot. this goes back to what we've been saying so far all year. It's like, Nebraska, why are you throwing so much? Why is 3rd-and-2 a passing down all of a sudden with a terrible quarterback? What really saved them was the reemergence of Divine. I'm going to screw this name up because I'm not looking at it, but Obazingo. The running back. Yeah, right. He was really good for them last year, I thought. He's barely seen the field this year. He only had 2 carries coming in today, and he wasn't even in the doghouse. That's just literally how the pecking order shook out after fall camp. He was third string, and Riley really only likes giving the ball to one guy. But he's kind of like the typical Husker runner who could run in between the tackles. And, it's like you got to be giving him the ball more often, and also on those 3rd-and-2 plays. But he finally came aboard in the second half and saved their bacon. Plus a big punt return from Pearson L.
Yeah, Nebraska. I don't know. Are we expecting Mike Riley to lose his job? I kind of think, especially now that the athletic director is out the door.
Yeah. He had a 4-year deal, which they extended this offseason from 2020. At $2.9 million a pop.
Yeah, that athletic director definitely deserved to be fired.
Yeah, but I mean, when you look at the fact that they, struggled to move the football against Northern Illinois, struggled to get going, against Rutgers, and all of a sudden, kind of that boring 8-4, 9-3 type Nebraska season that kind of looks out of reach.
Yes, at this point, absolutely.
It softens a little bit with a road game against Illinois to next week, but they got Wisconsin and Ohio State coming in. They have to go to Penn State. I feel like especially those Wisconsin and Ohio State games are at home coming up here in October. And I just have a really bad feeling for Nebraska that those are going to be embarrassments.
Yeah. Cause they also have, a trip to Purdue. They have a trip to Minnesota. They have a trip to Penn State. They still got Iowa as the season ender Friday after Thanksgiving game.
Yeah.
There aren't any obvious wins other than Illinois left on the schedule.
Right, right. And, you know, people listening, folks listening might be thinking, well, you know, what do you mean at Purdue, at Minnesota? Well, first of all, the Gophers have beaten Nebraska a few times since the Cornhuskers, since they've been in the same division here over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, 2 years ago, 2 years ago, Purdue put 55 on this team and won 55-45. Who is better? Who is better? Purdue is way better than they were that day, and Nebraska is way worse than they were that day.
Yeah. No, I'm fully expecting Purdue to win that one.
Yeah. I just wanted to remind people that Purdue scored 55 on them 2 years ago.
I appreciate the reminder. Anytime Daryl Hayes' team does something like that, it is worth noting, even several years after the fact. All right, the last game on the docket, this has become a shorter segment now that we're into Big Ten play. This is the final non-conference game. We saved this one for last. Notre Dame 38, Michigan State 18. And there was a little bit of face-saving going on at the end there with Michigan State that almost cost them their starting quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of crazy. I mean, I have to think that he was just trying to get him reps, but you know what? You know, they like that dignity stuff up there in state. And, you know, yeah, and maybe that's what they were just trying to do. They were trying to save face. And, you know, I haven't really read much post game, you know, but I'm certain. Maybe Graham Couch, maybe somebody else probably wrote this, that, hey, that 81-yard drive that they didn't get any points on in the second half, the makings of a contender were right there in that drive.
Absolutely.
I'm sure that's a quote-unquote MSU beat writer somewhere, someday, sometime today, probably.
It was just shot. I mean, I guess we should expect this. We saw Michigan do this with Brady Hoke when they left Devin Gardner and Devin Funchess out there, and then Funchess gets hurt late in the blowout against Notre Dame. But okay, I mean, they're talking about giving him more game reps, but the guy throws 51 passes in this game and runs 9 times. It's not like he didn't get enough work during the game. And on a completely meaningless final drive, he takes a low hit that gets flagged. And, you know, for a moment there, it's like, man, did they just lose their quarterback to a serious knee injury for no reason? You know, that face saving can come at a very serious cost, and it almost did for Michigan State in this game. But I think, you know, the turning point in this one came in the first half when Notre Dame is up 14, I believe it was 14-7, and Michigan State, or it might have been 21-7, Michigan State's driving, they're down to the 1 yard line, and LJ Scott coughs up the ball again. And Notre Dame immediately turns around and marches for a touchdown, and it goes from, you know, State possibly closing that gap to this game getting blown wide open.
Yeah. You know, and I think that sequence, I think, was interesting because I kind of feel like it shows off the contrast between the championship years of D'Antonio and pretty much every other stretch of Michigan State football, you know, in our lives. You know, that may have happened in 2013 or 2014, for example, but if it does, the defense is kicking Notre Dame off the field in 3 plays and getting the ball back.
Yeah.
Instead, Notre Dame diced them up that drive. They looked like shell-shocked at that point, the Michigan State defense and whole team. And then all of a sudden it was 28-21, you know, all of a sudden it was a 3-touchdown lead, 28-7. And then Michigan State gets the ball back next and they commit 3 penalties. So, like, I think that felt like that whole sequence, they just couldn't get off the mat. And I think that's a sign that this program fell so far last year. And it's just going to be a long climb back up.
Yeah, I mean, we had questions, obviously, about that secondary heading into this year, and State was very fortunate through their first couple games to not get a lot of long plays hit on them. And in this game, Notre Dame doesn't hit a ton of real deep stuff, but they are quite effective through the air. Brandon Wimbush averages 8.6 yards per attempt.
Yeah.
Michigan State only gets 1 sack. It does seem like the defense is kind of settling into, like, they are what we thought they were territory.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, frankly, you know, Wimbush, especially against Georgia, you know, he was struggling through the air. But their first drive of the game, he threw it 5 times, and Brown got behind the Butler kid, and boom, that didn't score the touchdown, but that, I think, set him up at first and goal. But I thought that was interesting. First drive of the game, you know, Wimbush, who really struggled throwing the football against Georgia, he ended up with 210 yards, but he had 40 attempts against the Bulldogs 2 weeks ago. Boom, right off the bat. You know, right off the bat, he was throwing the football against this team.
I don't think anybody's watched Michigan State film and decided that the way to attack them is not to go through the air.
Yeah.
That is still very much the deficiency in this defense. So we'll see. I mean, Michigan State, now heading into Big Ten season at 2-1, and they get to start it off with Iowa and then Michigan.
Yeah, I think, I have no idea how that Iowa game is going to go down. I mean, I feel like Iowa is the better team, but they're going to be on the road after that game last night. You know, who knows? But that's going to be a very interesting game to see, because I think, Iowa is the type of game, Michigan State's got about 5 or 6 of those games left on their schedule, and they have to win a couple of them in order to get to a bowl game. This is a problem for the Spartans. I just think that offensive line is still not very good. We haven't really talked much about that on this segment yet. But, they had 151 yards rushing, 4.7 yards an attempt, but they had a 56-yard rush, rather, by their quarterback on a 3rd-and-1 just kind of sneak. Mm-hmm. And through 3 games, he's still basically their leading rusher.
Yeah.
And that was a problem through the first 2 games, because when you play average to bad MAC teams, you are expected as the Big Ten team to have gaudy rushing stats and maybe running back stats that we don't necessarily believe in. They didn't even have that. So I didn't really expect that dynamic to change much yesterday at all. And it didn't. Now, I think that throughout the course of any game, they can move some chains once or twice or maybe 3 times with Lewerke's legs. But he is not a dual threat quarterback. So that's not good that he continually leads them in rushing. And I also don't think they held up very well protecting Lewerke. You mentioned the Scott fumble, and that is a change up of the game. But how about what gave them the lead to begin with? They just couldn't protect Lewerke. There was one sequence where they had a flea flicker, and there was just no chance for Lewerke once he got the ball back because the pressure was already there. They also forced a fumble on a scramble of his because he was just trying to do too much. He was under siege, and he's just not very accurate as a result. So they have major problems still on the offensive line outside of Brian Allen at center.
Yeah, no, I mean...
And that's what I don't think is going to get much better against Iowa or Michigan. I just don't see them running the football here in the next 2 weeks with their running backs.
That matchup against especially Michigan's defensive line is going to be rough for them.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, Jamie, any thoughts on the Michigan game?
Any thoughts on the Michigan game? Well, I mean, I tell you what, that's 3 opponents now that have talked smack before the game that have not turned out well. Phillips didn't have a catch yesterday.
No, he did not.
Which I wonder if that was by design or not. Not.
We hadn't noted that on the podcast yet, so I'm glad you got that in there.
Yeah. My thoughts on the Michigan game is I still cannot believe how great the defense is with, literally 10 new starters. That's an old narrative at this point. But once Michigan got the lead, I felt pretty good.
And that second half,
I don't know,
was incredibly dominant.
Yeah. I mean, how about I like the McCune Gentry Schoenle offense. That's great. That was awesome. The blocky, catchy offense.
it might be something they have to transition to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Gentry's a major matchup problem for everybody. And I think that's a weapon that's just going to keep growing. I'm not going to get involved in the quarterback thing because we have 2 weeks before the next game. And I think Spate's health is going to ultimately maybe decide that. But I was happy that O'Korn played well. I think halftime gave him a chance to kind of settle down. And now he owns wins over Indiana and Purdue already. So,
he's dominating the state of Indiana.
Yeah. Now that might be like taking over Australia first in a game of Risk, but you gotta start somewhere. And these are improved Indiana and Purdue teams. So, but I think the Big Ten at the top is as tough as ever, and Michigan has to seemingly play all of them. So I'm just trying to keep grounded with the team, but I love the way they're developing. I think the team's better days are ahead of them, as far as future seasons. So this has been a great start. I'm more interested. Well, I'm interested obviously in seeing how Michigan does, but I'm interested in seeing how Purdue rallies.
Absolutely.
They were kind of the story of the season, and with the state of Nebraska, and, you know, I don't know if Northwestern or Minnesota are any better than what they usually are. You know, there's a chance to slide up those Western standings, but also sometimes, though, when somebody kind of shows you up like that, it's hard to, I don't know. But I'm interested in seeing how they respond, because that could be a really fun story now that they're off the schedule.
Yeah. I'm excited to watch that team going forward now that Michigan does not have to deal with Jeff Brohm's offense anymore. But they still have quite an opportunity in front of them in the Big Ten West, because nobody has really seized hold of that division.
Yeah. And one thing to keep in mind as you watch the Boilermakers season play out is over the last four seasons, they have three combined Big Ten wins. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, even if they just go 4-5, for example, that's a huge accomplishment for them. And that would also give them six wins. And I didn't think they had any shot at a bowl game before the season, because they just have no history of winning Big Ten games. You know, and now I give them a great shot at getting to six wins. And, you know, I hope they pull it off.
Yeah, no, what Jeff Brohm has done, given the talent left behind for him, is nothing short of remarkable. Thank you, Jamie. We will be talking to you, I don't believe, next week, because we are doing our basketball hockey preview podcast during the bye, but we will catch you again in 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, that sounds great, and I don't mind being passed up by that, because Indiana is going to have a rough basketball season. I'd rather not talk about it.
All right, Jamie, we will talk to you again soon.
All right, sounds great, guys. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook, Pogs Tackles. I know we're bloggers, but come on, man.